Wednesday, June 21st, 2023, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope it is off to a good start. Hope you and your family and your friends are all staying strong and healthy right now. And yes, we are back after taking a little time off. If you listen to the podcast, then you know my daughter, who has actually had to fill in for me on the podcast before, she graduated from high school. So we had the graduation and the grad party, and I was off a week. And then we had the senior trip this past week. And I will just tell you this. The senior trip was pretty amazing. We went down to Puerto Vallarta, one of our favorite spots. We spent a week down there resting and relaxing, having some drinks. We had an absolutely amazing time down there with family, ate amazing food, drank a lot of piña coladas, and laid by the beach for a week. Hey, it was absolutely incredible, and it was a much, much needed break. And now, well, it's only Wednesday, and we are back to work. And that incredible vacation is already becoming a distant memory. How does that fade so quickly? Man, does time fly when you have to go back to reality. Yes, by the way, we were in Mexico when my Denver Nuggets won their very first NBA championship. Yes, I may or may not have run around the bar high-fiving strangers when a team that I thought would never win a title actually did the impossible. Now, was that the result of too much run? Too much sun? No, I would have done that anyways. I have no regrets whatsoever. I would have done that completely sober. So no, it had nothing to do with that, but we did celebrate the Nuggets title down in Mexico. But I hope that you had a good week last week. Played the best of here at the Dose. I also hope that you had a very happy Father's Day weekend. And more importantly, I hope that you didn't get any surprise pop-ins, any surprise phone calls, any surprise texts, or any surprise, you know, letters from judges or anything like that on Father's Day. That, my friends, can ruin your weekend real, real fast. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you to be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. In fact, if you saw the article that went up this week, talked a little bit about a kind of growing concern we have going on in Denver right now. You might want to head over there. But it's not just articles. We do put those up every week, but we have links to the podcast. We have links to the YouTube video, and we do have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you need a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie, maybe a coffee mug, be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com and checking in with what we have going over there. Today on the show, like I said, we have now been off two of the last 3 weeks here at the Dose. And so we have a number of things that we have learned while we were out, from college sports to the NBA to the NHL to the NFL. We have learned a number of things over the past few weeks. And we do also have a Daily Dose top five for this week. Remember, the 2023 NBA draft. Yeah, that's tomorrow night. And I won't be surprised if we see some big moves. But remember that the top prospect in this draft has some big potential. But we do have a word of caution. We'll get to that top five here in just a few minutes. But first, we do have a little bit of sports news coming out this week. And let's start off in the world of college sports, where the NCAA is trying its best to step into 2023. It seems that a medical committee is recommending that the college sports governing body stop testing athletes for marijuana and remove cannabis from their banned substance list. According to CBS Sports, the Committee on Competitive Safeguards and Medical Aspects of Sports is recommending shifting focus to testing instead for performance-enhancing drugs. And the committee intends to seek support from the NCAA Board of Governors to temporarily stop testing for cannabis at NCAA championship events while legislative action is considered. Now, all three levels of competitive competition, Division 1, 2, and 3, they would have to pass that legislation. That's not a guarantee. I mean, this seems like it's just a matter of time. Plus, marijuana doesn't seem to be a substance that gives athletes a competitive advantage. At the end of the day, a lot of these college athletes, they are adults. If marijuana is legal in their state and it doesn't provide competitive advantage, I mean, then why is it banned? Players that are at least 21 can drink alcohol. They can use tobacco products. So I think cannabis will be the next step that will be coming. Now, is any of this truly good for the kids? No, it probably isn't, in all honesty. But it is the world that we live in. And I think the NCAA is trying to get on board. And again, they're trying to make a case for their existence, because we all know it could go away very, very quickly. Speaking of the world that we live in, the NFL is going to redouble its efforts to reinforce the league's gambling policy to players following this rash of recent violations. The NFL said yesterday, all rookies will now be required to attend mandatory education sessions, and a group of league officials is making in-person visits to team facilities to emphasize and clarify what activities are prohibited because of all the sports gambling that's going on. Seen a number of guys get in trouble. They say there are six key rules of this gambling policy that the league officials are going to emphasize. Here are those six league policies. One, don't bet on the NFL. Okay, I think that one's kind of obvious, right? Two, don't gamble at your team facility while traveling for a road game or while staying at a team hotel. All right. Three, don't have someone bet for you. Four, don't share team inside information. Five, do not enter a sports book during the NFL playing season. And then six, do not play daily fantasy football. Now remember, five NFL players were suspended in decisions handed down back in April. And then again this month, an investigation focused on Indianapolis Colts cornerback Isaiah Rodgers. And sources say they believe Rodgers was actually betting on Colts games. Yeah, here's what the NFL vice president and chief compliance officer Sabrina Perel had to say. We have a number of resources and tools, both internally and externally. We have to continue to be as robust as possible. So it's multiple tools and resources that we're using. And I do think as time goes, those will continue to mature and develop, and there will be things that we might be doing 2 years from now that we're not doing today. Perel also said sports books are going to be working in conjunction with the league. They will alert the NFL if and when a player places a bet, at least under his own name. Now we know, you know, they can do a lot of things with technology, and they're going to have to track these guys down if they are actually out there betting on NFL things. But I realize that this story was grabbed. It was grabbed by the big media companies. It was grabbed specifically by the worldwide leader in sports. And they all say the same thing. Hey, yes, the NFL is really doing their due diligence here. They're really trying to get rid of gambling in the NFL because we have seen these issues. Can we all stop pretending one thing? Can we all stop pretending like the players in the NFL don't know this? I know that we as the general public, we might not be aware of how much they talk about this. Let me ask you this though. How much are you aware of how much NCAA teams talk about betting? Because you might not be that aware of it. Oh, but it's out there. If you go talk to any coach at any collegiate level, I am talking NAIA, I am talking D1, D2, D3, junior college, I don't care. They are all very aware of betting policies. Why? Because that is the quickest way to ruin your name and lose your career. Get involved in some sort of betting scandal. It took down Rick Neuheisel. All he did was bet on, you know, his March Madness bracket. Took him down. You think players in the NFL don't know this? Oh, they've been told this. They've gone to rookie symposiums. They've heard everything. Hey, don't bet. Don't bet on the NFL. Don't be playing fantasy football. They've heard all of these things ever since this stuff started getting legal. The only difference now is the NFL is telling the media, hey, and by the way, we're telling our players this. don't act like they haven't been telling them all along. The fact that the players are doing it isn't really an indication of what the NFL has taught them. It's more of an indication of how stupid the players are that they still think they're going to get away with it. But now the NFL comes out and says, oh, and here's everything we're teaching our players. They've known. Don't play ignorant. We know that they've known. There's no way the NFL did not turn this rock over. I promise you, they did. They do it at every level. Moving over to the NBA, and we're going to be talking some NBA this week. But we did have a couple of things coming out early this week. The Washington Wizards are finalizing a trade to send three-time All-Star guard Bradley Beal to the Phoenix Suns for a package that will include Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, several second-round picks, and a few pick swaps. And it looks like the new Phoenix super team will now be Bradley Beal paired with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. Now, Beal had to lift his no-trade clause to accommodate this deal to a Suns franchise that has now realized this is a really top-heavy roster of talent and salary. Get this. Beal will join Booker, Durant, and DeAndre Ayton all on max contracts. Now, what does that mean? Remember, there is a CBA agreement that is going to severely limit roster flexibility of teams above that luxury tax. They're trying to make it a little bit of a harder cap. But hey, the Suns are pushing all their chips into the middle of the table. They are chasing a ring. Owner Matt Ishbia has made a massive commitment to salary and that luxury tax with Beal and that Durant deal to pursue that title in the coming seasons. But get this, the Suns will have $163 million in salary committed to those four players, Booker, Durant, Beal, and Ayton. That is a ton of money. More importantly, that is a ton of money to get knocked out in the second round of the playoffs. I mean, who else are you going to put on that roster? They're going to have to play for basically free. I don't like this deal for the Suns. I understand it, but this doesn't seem like a great deal. They're going to have a ton of money tied up in four players that, honestly, all have a history of being a little bit injured. We know KD could go down anytime. Beal is always hurt. He's always got a wrist or a hand problem, it seems like. I don't know. This seems like a ton of money. But the pressure is now on for Phoenix. Make no mistake. Meanwhile, kind of lost in the whole thing. Chris Paul, what now? I mean, should he just retire? Remember, Washington is where players' careers go to die. I guess we'll just never hear from Chris Paul again. What I would expect him to join the Wizards roster and then be trade bait before the trade deadline, and they'll try to move him where they can get the most for him. Hey, it's been a fun ride, Chris Paul, but we might be seeing the end of the line, and we might be seeing a player never get that elusive title that he's been chasing his entire career. Finally, it seems that Golden State Warriors forward Draymond Green has declined his $27.6 million player option and instead will be entering unrestricted free agency. Now, that wasn't a big surprise. It was expected that Draymond would opt out. Now he can talk with the Warriors, but he can also explore sign and trades. He can explore free agency, a couple other avenues for him. But the Warriors have been motivated to sign Green to a new deal. The four-time All-Star has been a pillar of their dynasty over the past decade. Remember, he was drafted with the 35th pick back in 2012, and they still kind of look to him as being the heart and soul. He has anchored their defense. Even though he's not the player he was, he has kind of got them in the position that they need to be defensively. But this past season, we started to see some big cracks in Green's leadership. Remember, he punched Jordan Poole at training camp, an incident that Warriors head coach Steve Kerr called at the time the biggest crisis he's ever had in his tenure. Later, he said it left a cloud over their season. And, you know, Green struggled to get the trust of his teammates. We saw him break down a couple times during the year. Here's the question that I have for you, Daily Dose listener. Would you want Draymond Green on your team at this stage in his career? I mean, you think of him being an anchor. You think of the things he has won. But you also think of the meltdowns and the technicals and the punching a teammate in the jaw in practice, the kicking, the hitting opponents, all the silly nonsense, the going over and yelling at crowds, getting teed up, getting thrown out of games. Would you want him on your team right now? Yeah, me neither. And I have to wonder if maybe he has a little bit of an inflated thought of what his value is right now, because I don't see it as being nearly as high as he apparently does. I don't think I'd want him on my team. I guess depending on the team, we know NBA owners are often copycats. Hey, he won a title, go get him. I just don't think he would be worth the money that he's going to demand right now. Okay, coming back. The world of sports has seen a number of big stories taking place over the last few weeks. And when we get back, we're going to be taking a closer look at some of the things that we have learned from those stories. So we have been out a few weeks here at the Dose, like 2 out of the last 3 weeks. But there have been a number of big sports stories taking place. And while it's really popular right now to throw out hot takes these days in sports media, taking this extra time actually allows us to take in the full picture, take in the full story, and see things just a little more clearly. So right now, we are going to be taking a look at some of what we have learned in sports recently. And to start off, we learned that, like I talked about earlier, the Denver Nuggets broke a 56-year streak of never winning anything whatsoever of importance. The Nuggets used their size, they used their strength, and they rolled through the NBA postseason in just 20 total games. They beat the Minnesota Timberwolves in 5 games, the Phoenix Suns in 6 games, the Los Angeles Lakers in 4 games, and then the Miami Heat also in 5 games. That, by the way, is the second fewest games needed since the NBA expanded their playoff format back in 2003. That's pretty dominant. And I know what the sports media narrative is right now. The Denver Nuggets faced garbage teams in their run. Fair enough. Totally get it. They played an 8 seed, then a 4 seed, then a 7 seed, and another 8 seed. So yeah, no 2s, no 3s. They didn't even face a 1 in the finals. So it was a softer trek than many have had. And yet, if it was so soft, why didn't most of the experts pick the Nuggets to win it all? Most of them had them going and losing to the Suns. They definitely had them losing to the Lakers. And, you know, a lot of the experts on that worldwide leader in sports network, they picked the Miami Heat in the finals. So you thought the competition was good, apparently, because you picked them. But then when the Nuggets whipped them, then it wasn't good. Not sure exactly how that works. You can't have it both ways. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the Nuggets faced Murderer's Row. But let's not forget, they did beat Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, and Devin Booker. They did sweep LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And then they did beat Jimmy Butler. And they did it pretty easily. So that's a decent group of players' heads that you placed on your mantle as you beat them. But I will tell you that what I personally learned from the Nuggets title run, for all of the talk about their offense and the amazing offensive player that star center, and let's be honest, should have been 3-time NBA MVP, Nikola Jokic is, it was the Nuggets defense that won this title for him. In those 5 games against the Miami Heat, the Nuggets only scored 104 points per game. That is a far cry from their season average of nearly 116 points per game. So how did they win? Well, the Nuggets only allowed 96 points per game in those finals. Look, I started watching the Denver Nuggets back in the 70s when I was a little kid. I never thought I would see them win a title. I truly didn't. I certainly Never thought I would see them win a title with defense and with toughness. And I have to give a ton of credit to their head coach, Mike Malone, who, I'll be very honest, I have doubted often in his run here in Denver. There are times his substitution patterns, they drive me crazy. And sometimes I feel like that offense lacks imagination. He does just a lot of Jokic, Murray, two-man stuff. And I understand it, but I can't even argue with his results now. Mike Malone led this franchise that has a history of hard luck and stupidity to a title. And honestly, I still can't believe it. Okay, and now I am going to discuss one more thing that I learned after the Nuggets title run. And I can't put it all on them. That's not fair. And I'm not blaming them for this. And you can go ahead and you can call me old man as I tell the young whippersnappers, get off my lawn. But I'm going to say this anyway. And I know it won't be popular. I know a lot of people won't like it, but I have to say it. Okay. I'm going to say this. Are you ready? Does anyone know why the tradition began after the Indianapolis 500 race where the winner drinks milk? Do you know where that all came from? A lot of people don't. Back in the 30s, Louis Meyer drank milk and the Dairy Association jumped on it and they paid the drivers to drink it. And they felt it was a wholesome thing. And so they created this sponsorship with the milk company. And after the 500, people still do it. Thought it was a good representation for kids. These days, Indy 500 winners get a few $100,000 to drink the milk. But again, everyone liked it because drinking milk looked nice. It looked wholesome for the winners to be drinking it instead of maybe beer or champagne or whatever they could drink. But now, when teams win a championship, we are seeing this tradition of players getting completely trashed publicly at the parade. And it, honestly, it's become the new norm. And don't get me wrong, it can be funny. I'm not saying that. We see Tom Brady throwing the Lombardi trophy. We saw here at the Nuggets parade, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope shotgunning two beers at a time, and it's all pretty funny. I get it. But here we go. Old man, get off my lawn. Here is my moment. What are we teaching our kids when they watch this stuff? Our kids are jacked up enough these days, aren't they? Without watching their heroes act like complete drunken imbeciles in public? Can you imagine, for one second, athletes like Julius Erving or Walter Payton, Joe Namath, even Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali, Joe Montana, getting obliterated in public and acting like fools? That would never happen. Why? Because those players from that era had way too much respect for themselves, for their families, for their teams, to do it. And they didn't want to be seen by kids acting that way. I know. I'm old grouchy guy. I get it. Believe me. But these guys are supposed to be heroes to our kids, aren't they? This trend is kind of disgusting and it's kind of gross. And I would hope that parents are at home telling their kids, okay, that's what they're doing. That's not okay for you. But you know what? I bet they aren't. We also learned what that NBA suspension of Memphis Grizzlies guard Ja Morant was going to be. In March, Morant, who is only 23, was suspended for 8 games after an Instagram live video showed him displaying a firearm here in a Denver area nightclub. In the days after, they say Morant went to a counseling facility in Florida. 2 months later, he was filmed again posing with a firearm in a car. The Grizzlies suspended Morant from all team activities, and he has remained suspended ever since. But last week, the NBA announced it would be suspending Ja for, wait for it, yes, 25 games to start next season. Now, the NBA's Player Association, they're acting like they're mad. But I don't even think they can do it with a straight face. They know Ja is getting off easy. But hey, we all know NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, he is a doormat for the NBA players. And after all of his posturing that he was really going to lay down the law on Ja, He did exactly what we thought he would. You want proof? You want proof? Here's a clip from the Daily Dose back on June 7th. With Adam Silver, I expect maybe a 25-game suspension? And now that sounds like a lot. 25 games, that's a lot. Except, remember that under the new CBA, players can still make the All-NBA team if they play at least 65 games. So you already get 17 games off. Adding another 8? Big deal. Who cares? Yeah, called it. How did I know? Because Adam Silver really wants to be friends with the players because he was a big nerd his whole life and he wants to hang out with them. Look, I don't care. I really don't care what he does with Ja Morant. I truly don't. Remember, this wasn't a legal thing. This was a league image thing. Here is my warning. Don't give me all the BS social justice slogans, putting them on your baseline and on player warmups about peace and how many more and mentor and love us and crap like that when you can't even get your own players to live those slogans. Don't tell us how to live. You can't even get your own players to stop waving guns on social media. The NBA, as usual, is really, really far removed from reality. We also learned that after 13 years, Michael Jordan has agreed to sell his majority stake in the Charlotte Hornets to a group led by Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall for an approximate $3 billion value. Schnall is a minority owner with the Atlanta Hawks, and Plotkin was a minority owner with the Hornets. Now they will step up and become the majority owners. Jordan will continue to oversee basketball operations through the NBA draft and even to the start of free agency on July 1st. And then once the sale is complete, Jordan will hold a minority stake. They say he will have a presence with the franchise, but that he won't be the front man. Now, I am a believer that Michael Jordan is probably the best player to ever play in the NBA. But I'm not sure that anyone can argue in favor of Jordan's moves as an owner, from botched draft picks to bad trades to horrible contracts. Jordan's tenure as owner was filled with disaster after disaster. In addition, during Jordan's tenure, the Bobcats actually went 7-59 during the 2011-2012 campaign. That is the worst season in NBA history. Hey, this is just another example. Great players don't always make great owners, and they certainly don't make great coaches. We have a ton of examples of that, and here is yet another. Get ready for a bumpy one, kids, because we learned that New Orleans Pelicans injury report superstar Zion Williamson, he might not be getting much done on the basketball court, but dude is apparently quite busy off of it. Remember that Mount Zion only played 29 regular season games this year, and he missed the entire 2021-2022 season. The concerning thing for me is that you can make a pretty good case that these injuries, yeah, they could probably be attributed to his weight, because he looks like a Charles Barkley before Nutrisystem photo. But forget his play, forget his weight. It was announced that Zion and his girlfriend Akima are going to be having a baby together. A gender reveal party was posted on social media, and it was pink fireworks and confetti, and a baby girl is going to be due this December. Congrats to the happy couple. Yeah, and that announcement lasted about 30 seconds. And then we found out what Zion has really been doing instead of working out and getting in shape. Because, get ready for it, kids, adult film star Mariah Mills went on a Twitter tirade, claiming that she had recent sexual relations with Zion, and it all kind of went downhill from there. Here is what Ms. Mills had to say on Twitter. Better pray I'm not pregnant too, because I'm definitely late. I was with you last week in New Orleans, and you couldn't tell me you had a random thought pregnant after all I've done for you. I warned you about trapping type hoes, and you didn't listen to me. I know the game. F you and congrats. Zion, maybe you should have been working on your game and your rehab a little bit more than working on chasing skanks. Here's something to think about, and you can take from this what you will. The best players in the game today, yeah, they're mostly from overseas. Nikola Jokic, Giannis, Joel Embiid, Luka, and I'll be honest, I don't know that much about their personal lives. And then we have young superstars like Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, and we know all about their personal lives because they're more focused on those than on their game. Just guessing. But it might be time to reevaluate your priorities. Now it sounds like the Pelicans are shopping Williamson because they say he doesn't have much relationship with the franchise, his teammates, or the front office. But honestly, right now, would you trade for him? Dude might end up being a victim of a domestic incident if he's not careful. I don't think I want him right now. No, thank you. Okay, let's move over to the ugly stepchild of the NBA. No, I'm not talking about the G League or whatever. I am talking about the WNBA that the NBA pays for, but gets nothing in return from other than like poor highlights and a lot of whining mostly. And no, I'm not actually talking about the hurtful comments that were directed at WNBA star Brittany Griner recently at a Dallas airport. It seems that a fan heckled her for going to Russian prison and then getting traded back to the U.S. for a Russian arms dealer nicknamed the Merchant of Death. Now the NBA is actually asking for charter flights so she doesn't have to experience such pain in the future. You know, honestly, just side note, it is hilarious to hear actual sports people asking, why don't WNBA teams fly private? Well, let me ask you, does your rec league team fly private? No, they don't. And they make about the same amount of money as the WNBA. But that's not what I'm talking about either. No, what I'm referring to, that you might not have seen, is WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert last week made an appearance and said it would not be her first choice for the league, but that the WNBA would consider hosting a game in the country of Saudi Arabia. So we learned that the WNBA is even more delusional than we had already believed they were. Not only would Saudi Arabia not want the WNBA, but, you know, I would think that the halftime stonings of the girls wearing short pants and, of course, uncovered faces might be a little bit of a detriment to the game itself. Look, it is one thing for the WNBA to be so completely removed from reality as to think they deserve the same pay as the men's players who actually bring in money. But to say that they would play in a country known for human rights violations, specifically, I might add, against women, can the WNBA even hear themselves when they talk? What kind of echo chamber are they in? I have no idea what planet the WNBA lives on, but it is not this one, and it is not any other one in reality. Switching over to Major League Baseball, and that league is rolling along in a season filled with changes. We have new rules. The game looks completely different, and I, for one, I think it's had a very positive impact. I've actually found myself watching a little bit of baseball here and there, but we did learn something over this past week in Major League Baseball, and that is that that league absolutely hates the city of Oakland. Okay, no huge surprise there, right? It was already announced that the Oakland A's are going to be moving to Las Vegas, they say, for the 2027 season. So now, the city of Oakland has lost the Raiders in the NFL and the Athletics in Major League Baseball. Plus, I mean, they have to live in the city of Oakland. But wait, Major League Baseball wanted to dig the knife in a little bit deeper. Get this. Last week, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred took some questions at the owners' meetings in New York. And as you can imagine, many of them had to do with the A's relocating to Vegas. Two of his answers in particular show just how much MLB hates Oakland. The first was when he was asked if he had watched last week's reverse boycott. And what that was Oakland fans saying, hey, we're going to pack the stadium. They got over 27,000 people to show up to prove there is a fan base in Oakland. They're just not going to support that terrible ownership. Here's what Manfred had to say about that. Yeah, it was great. It's great to see what is, this year, almost an average Major League Baseball crowd in the facility for one night. That's a great thing. Okay, that's a shot. And while we at the Dose love some sarcasm, That might have been a mean shot. But the second was when he blamed the city of Oakland for the situation, saying, I think that the real question is, what is it that Oakland was prepared to do? There was no Oakland offer, okay? They never got to a point where they had a plan to build a stadium at any site. Okay, again, fair enough. But he didn't mention the fact that Major League Baseball bent over backwards for the city of Vegas. A lot of people might not realize this, but did you know that there's actually a relocation fee to move a franchise? They estimate this fee for the Oakland A's would be $300 million. Yet Manfred waived that fee if they agreed to move to Vegas. Hey, the state of California has proven that it might not be the best place for pro sports franchises or college teams or whatever. That state is broke, fans don't care, and the taxes are already sky high. But when the league is making moves to help a team leave and go to a better city, I mean, you don't need to take shots at the city and the fans again. Jeez, Rob Manfred, let the body get cold at least. Okay, coming back, we will finish off a few things that we have learned in sports, including one college that is moving conferences yet again, and we have a couple of college coaches that are in some serious trouble. But then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. The 2023 NBA draft is tomorrow night. We have a pretty good idea of who the top pick is going to be. But we also have some caution for fans that are expecting too big of things from that pick. So let's finish up with a few things that we have learned from the past week or so in the world of sports. And we have learned that San Diego State has now notified the Mountain West Conference that they are planning on leaving. In a letter, the school asked the Mountain West for a one-month extension given unforeseen delays involving other collegiate athletic conferences beyond our control. As of now, there doesn't appear to be an invitation to San Diego State from a Power 5 conference, but that is the obvious reason that they would do this. And I would think it would be the Pac-12, although the Big 12 is also a possibility. Now, San Diego State would need to give a year of notice in order to withdraw from the Mountain West next June. If it waits past June 30th, the exit fee it would owe jumps from nearly $16.5 million to almost double that at $34 million. Now, San Diego State has long been linked to the Pac-12, but remember that the Pac-12 is in the middle of a process of trying to land a television contract, and that still isn't done. And they say there has been no formal invitation for the school to join the Pac-12 just yet, because the Pac-12 obviously has other things they're working on, and the timeline for such a move has been linked to either the Pac-12 television deal or the departure of another Pac-12 member. Now, San Diego State is attempting to explore all options, because if the Pac-12 doesn't get a TV deal done by June 30th, then maybe they go independent, maybe they wait a year, maybe then they jump to the Big 12, but it would seem that the Pac-12 also needs one more school to jump to. And so if San Diego State is on their wish list, I would expect they're also wishing for someone else. And if I had to guess, I would throw out a team maybe like SMU. Because then that gets the Pac-12 a foothold in the state of Texas. So don't be surprised when that ends up coming down the pipe. We learned that a couple of college coaches have gotten themselves in some trouble. We start with West Virginia basketball coach Bob Huggins, who was already on thin ice after he had dropped some homophobic slurs on a radio interview back, I don't know, a month or so ago, talking about another school and their fans. But then, over the weekend, Bob Huggins was arrested for a DUI in Pennsylvania. And the problem there is, like I said, he was already on thin ice. Oh, and by the way, Coach Huggy already has a history of DUIs. Hey, Bob Huggins was the active leader in Division I wins He had 934 wins. His head coaching career goes clear back to Walsh College back in 1980. In fact, Huggins was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame just back in 2022. But in Pennsylvania, his blood alcohol level at his DUI arrest was nearly three times the legal limit. It's an intoxication level so dangerous, they say some adults have to be hospitalized if they reach it. And then empty beer cans and bottles were found on the floor and in the trunk of his school-issued vehicle. This is a sad end for Bob Huggins. And I'm not a huge hug guy, but he always seemed like he did care about his kids. He always seemed like he tried to teach them the right things. Hey, Bob Huggins needs some help. This is obviously a problem, and it is not good at all. But he's not the only one, because it also seems that University of Colorado football coach Deion Sanders, well, he's got some problems too. See, Sanders has previously had two of his toes amputated, and now they're saying he faces the risk of losing his entire left foot due to ongoing blood circulation issues.
Oh, now you're going to shoot me in my pinky toe.
Here's what Deion had to say. I don't have feeling in the bottom of my foot at all. And I want to get this procedure done this summer because when we get rolling, I'm not going to have time to do it. Since his last operation, where they removed those toes, an ultrasound has revealed that some previously opened arteries have now closed. And that poor circulation, which you might remember, actually caused him to miss three games when he was at Jackson State, when he had those toes amputated. Now he's the head guy, and now it sounds like it's getting worse. And Deion said that if that operation is needed, he wants to do it as soon as possible, even prior to his first game with the Colorado Buffaloes football team. Hey, all kidding aside, how do you coach on one foot? You walk the sideline. You're active. You're out on the field. It's not like, I mean, can you get him like a chair? Does he have like an electric wheelchair or something? Do you get him a peg like a pirate? I have no idea how this would work, but they need to figure this out because this sounds like a really, really bad situation. And the thing that disturbs me is it just spreading up his leg? I don't know. This doesn't sound good at all. Finally, let's finish off in the NHL as the Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup in just five games after, we might add, only 6 years of existence as a franchise. But the Knights, they were just too big. They were too fast. They were too strong. They were too disciplined for every single opponent that they faced. Well, the Vegas Golden Knights offseason, it could get started with a bang. Literally. Over the weekend, the champs held their victory parade. And I'm warning you right now, the partying has just begun. We know, we talked about it earlier in the show, they're going to be out partying. They're going to be out drinking in front of everyone. A lot of appearances from now until next year. Well, there might even be a really disgusting party that takes place. Because it seems that there's an offer on the table should the team decide to go with their Stanley Cup celebration. Alice Little, a licensed sex worker who claims to be the highest grossing sex worker in the history of Nevada, told TMZ Sports that she and her Chicken Ranch brothel co-workers are ready to reward the team for their work this season. Here is what the local skank had to say. We here in Sin City love the Golden Knights more than life itself. I cannot express in words the joy I feel now that the team won their first ever Stanley Cup, so I'm going to express it through my actions. Ugh, this is gross. Little and her co-workers are offering to host the team at the brothel for the most extravagant sex party ever. Ugh. We learned that the Vegas Golden Knights might get themselves involved in the most disgusting off-season team-building activity ever. And I mean ever. And that the entire experience would be free. Little was nice enough, she says, to foot the bill for the party should the team choose to take them up on the offer. Dozens of ladies, she said, myself included, are ready and waiting at the Chicken Ranch to treat the Knights to any and every carnal delight, and there will be absolutely no penalties for misconduct. The brothel is all yours, boys, free of charge. It's on me. Look, we all know that some disgusting things have taken place in or around the Stanley Cup. But I don't know that we need hepatitis C associated with the Lord Stanley Cup. Again, this is disgusting, and I don't want to know about it. Meanwhile, in related news, Zion Williamson is reportedly trying to learn how to skate. Kind of disgusting. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Five! Yes, the 2023 NBA Draft is tomorrow night, and the San Antonio Spurs have the top pick. They are widely expected to select 19-year-old phenom, 7'2" French basketball star Victor Wembanyama. Wemby, as he's being called, is also being called a generational talent. ESPN is raving about how he is the most anticipated player ever, which obviously must have been stated by someone at ESPN who is either under the age of 20 or they have an IQ of equal or lesser than 20. Either way, Wemby is 7'2", and at just 19, he could easily grow another inch or two. They say he can handle the ball. He can shoot it. He can rebound. He can score. He can defend the rim. He is a sure thing. And yet, I have a few concerns about young Wemby. First, there are concerns about the expectations. He's being compared to Spurs greats like Tim Duncan and David Robinson. Hey, both of those guys were polished, grown men when they got to the NBA. Second, Wemby is a tad thin. Dude weighs about 200 pounds dripping wet. Okay. Well, I mean, we saw Kevin Durant look like a literal stick figure too, so maybe Wemby is that kind of player. However, the final concern is the biggest for me. And that is this. We really don't see that many great players over the height of 7'2". As crazy as that sounds, basketball is a big man's game, right? Shouldn't it be a big man would be better than a little man? Well, not always. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the NBA players over 7'2 that have scored the most points in history. And trust me on this, the list is a little, I guess, odd. We start off at number 5. And we start with a guy that was supposed to be the greatest big man ever. He was arguably the most heavily recruited college basketball prospect of his generation. He appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated, get this, 6 times in less than 4 years. He ended up playing center at the University of Virginia, where he led the Cavaliers to an NIT title in 1980. They went to the Final Four in 81. They went to the Elite Eight in 83. He earned 3 Naismith Awards as the National Player of the Year. He was only the second athlete in history to do that. With his size, this guy was 7'4", and agility, he could bring the ball up on the break. He was a good passer. Ralph Sampson was expected to revolutionize the center position when he was drafted by the Houston Rockets in 1983. As a rookie, he averaged 21 points and 11 rebounds a game. He played in the All-Star game. He won the Rookie of the Year. He even helped lead the Rockets to the NBA Finals in 1986 when he was teamed up with Hakeem Olajuwon and they formed the Twin Towers. The problem with Sampson was that he was a slight guy, and the physicality of the league wore on his body, and it wore specifically on his knees. After his second year in the league, he never played 82 games in one single season. Over the next 8 years, he would miss 354 games with various injuries, but again, mostly to those knees. He played 456 games. He averaged 15 points and 9 boards. Very good. Did he revolutionize the position? No. But he did score over 7,000 points in his career. 7,039 points to be exact. And that lands him on our list today at number 5. We move up to number 4. And we get to a player that was born in the country of Latvia and won a Euro Cup at the age of just 19. The following season, 7'3" Kristaps Porzingis declared for the NBA draft, and the New York Knicks selected him with the 4th overall pick of the 2015 draft. He was compared with players like Pau Gasol and Dirk Nowitzki, and things looked really good for him to start. He finished his rookie year averaging 14 points and 7 boards a game. But he could also pass. He could block shots. He finished 2nd in the NBA Rookie of the Year award voting behind Karl-Anthony Towns. Then he blew his ACL. Then he tore his meniscus. He would end up playing with the Dallas Mavericks. At times, he would show flashes of being a star. He could shoot. He could rebound. He was a big guy. Kevin Durant called Kristaps a unicorn because he had such unique abilities. But he's had a hard time staying healthy. There are also rumors that he can be difficult to deal with. The Mavericks sent him to Washington, where he still is with the Wizards, although he doesn't really do all that much. In his 8 years, Porzingis has scored 7,876 points. He's been good at times. Never really been great. He comes in on our list today at number 4. We arrive at number 3. And for my money, this is probably the best player of the bunch. He was so big. He worked very hard. He was pretty skilled. But yeah, you guessed it. He couldn't stay healthy. Our number 3 entry was born in Shanghai. He started playing for the Shanghai Sharks as a teenager, and he played on their senior team for 5 years in the CBA. He won a title in his last year. After negotiating with the CBA and the Sharks to get his release, he was selected by the Houston Rockets with the 1st overall pick of the 2002 NBA draft. And this guy had so much promise. He was the biggest human being most of us had ever seen. Yao Ming was the only guy I've ever seen in my life that actually made Shaquille O'Neal look small by comparison. Yao stood an incredible 7'6". He weighed in at well over 310 pounds. He was a real-life giant. But he also had soft hands. He could shoot it. He worked hard. Yao was absolutely dominant once he figured out the NBA game. He reached the NBA playoffs 4 times. The Rockets actually won a series in 2009, which was their first victory since 97. He was named to the NBA All-Star Game 8 times. However, in July of 2011, Yao announced his retirement because of a series of foot and ankle injuries, which were causing him to miss so many games. In 8 years with the Rockets, Yao ranked 6th among franchise leaders in total points and total rebounds, and 2nd in total blocks. In his 8-year career, Yao Ming scored 9,247 points. Now, considering he only played 486 games, that's pretty impressive. He was averaging 19 points a game. But his body couldn't take it. He comes in today at number 3. We reached number 2 on our list of NBA players that have scored the most career points while standing 7'2" or bigger. And we get to another foreign-born player. Hailing from Lithuania, our next entry dominated the Lithuanian leagues before being drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers with the 20th overall pick of the 96 NBA draft. He stood 7'3". He was a presence in the paint defensively, and this guy could shoot it. He was a deadly jump shooter. Then the Cavs drafted high school phenom LeBron James in 2001, and this giant served as a great recipient of LeBron's assists. Zerdunas Ilgauskas was a good, tough player. But, stop me if you've heard this already, he couldn't stay healthy. Ilgauskas suffered from foot and ankle problems for most of his career. He missed a ton of time as a result. He spent 15 seasons in the NBA, but he also missed a lot of games during that time. He averaged 13 points a game. It was a long career. He scored nearly 11,000 points. Zerdunas Ilgauskas had a very solid career. Again, he was a good player, just not a great player. And injuries cut his time short. He comes in today at number two. So we arrive at the player that stood taller than 7'2" and scored the most points in his NBA career. And who could we be talking about here? You might come up with it if you think real, real hard. But I'm telling you, it won't be easy. Because our number one entry was born in the Netherlands. He would come to the United States as a teenager. He would attend Marist College. He was 7'4". So yeah, he was a matchup problem. And he actually led Marist to the NCAA tournament for the first time in their school's history. But he kind of had the typical rep for a Euro player. Yes, he was big. He was talented. But he couldn't play the physical ball they played in the NBA, right? Except he kind of could. Rick Smits was drafted second overall in 1988 by the Indiana Pacers. He became the first Marist player to ever play in the NBA. He spent his entire career with the Pacers. And while he was originally penciled in to be a backup, he ended up starting 71 games in his rookie year. He averaged 12 points a game, 6 rebounds. He earned all rookie first team honors. And then he continued to average double digit point totals in every year of his career. Rick Smits would team with Pacers shooter Reggie Miller to lead the Pacers all the way to the NBA Finals in 2000. But he would end up suffering nerve damage in his feet. He ended up having to have some spinal surgeries and get out of the game. In all, Rick Smits played 12 seasons in the NBA. He averaged nearly 15 points a game, and he was elected to an All-Star team in 1998. In his career, he scored nearly 13,000 points, which places him on top of our list today. As you can see, this list today, I mean, it's a little odd. These aren't exactly household names. Being a big guy comes with big expectations. But the human body is not always ready for those. I fully expect the San Antonio Spurs to select Wimby with the top pick in tomorrow night's draft. And they probably should. He looks like the most talented player. But fans may want to temper those expectations just a little bit. Because as you can see from our list today, being a big talented guy, that doesn't guarantee any greatness. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are working on a couple of things for next week, but we will, of course, keep you updated on that NBA draft and all that is going on in the world of sports as only we can. So be sure that you tune into The Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSport.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Oh, now you're going to shoot me in my pinky toe.